You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Hungry for adventure? Then travel to A La Carte, the charming land below the floating city of Heavenly Delight, and join the young cook Ramen for her daily dose of wacky hijinks in the new series Delicious. With a cast of eccentric, strong female characters, this wonderfully illustrated comedy comic will be out in July, but you can pre-order now by clicking the banner on the page for this podcast. Get the limited hardcover first edition, plus free stickers and an art print as a gift.
Wow, stickers!
A perfect gift for your child, or those of you who are forever young at heart. One of Us strongly recommends this one.
Who knew that the pre-existence, post-existence, whatever this film is, takes place all in Utah?
In a way, that kind of makes sense. I don't know.
Is that where it's filmed?
Yeah, that's the Salt Lake Flats. You know, the Salt Flats that they filmed there. This entire movie was shot entirely in Utah. So.
Oh, and it played at Sundance?
Coincidence? I think not. But damn, that must be some tax break.
Oh, it kind of is. Also, just to show that for the purpose of this film, that the Salt Flats is like the most desolate, exotic place you could film anything for this kind of stuff. And it worked. The way they shot this movie is such a weird, ethereal feel whenever you walk around the house and outside of it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked the setting. I'd love to visit.
I love the isolation factor of it, the desolateness of it. It really worked.
Well, hey, everybody. Why are we talking about Utah? Well, mostly because of me, but we're also talking about this.
Because we're planning our family vacation. Sorry.
Hey, I went to college in Utah, so I know everywhere they shot in this movie. But I helped film a movie in Utah. I know those locations. So, but we're also talking about this film, 9 Days. This is interesting because this is the directorial, like, featured directorial debut for director Edson Oda, I think his name is.
That's crazy. This is a debut film. I can't. That's wild.
Previously, they had done music videos and commercials before this. So this is their first epic feature. Oh. And of course, they go for an epic feature by making it a over 2 hour long movie. You know, go big for this one.
Was it 2 hours? I can't remember. I don't remember.
Yeah, it's just over 2 hours, but it feels longer because it's a very slow paced movie.
You know? How did he get such a big cast? Or was the cast not famous yet?
I don't know how he got this many big name actors, because this was filmed just before COVID stuff happening. So
Okay. All
these people were established stars by this.
Yeah.
Winston Duke, Zazie Beetz, Bill Skarsgård, Benedict Wong, Tony Hale. That's nothing to sneeze at.
No, not at all.
I think Tony Hale's the only non-Marvel character in this.
that is true, probably. Because, Zazie Beetz is in Deadpool. That's a good point.
Yeah, so's the Sarsgaard. Billy Sarsgaard?
Bill Sarsgaard. No.
Is Bill Sarsgaard?
Bill Sarsgaard.
That's right.
Oh, right. Oh, right.
He gets he's acid vomit too. Guy.
That's right.
That's right. Everyone is in a Marvel thing at some point or another, whether MCU or Marvel adjacent. I'm going to summarize what 9 Days is about, because when you think about it, for being a two-hour movie, the plot's actually fairly simple, you know, for everything that's being discussed here. This story takes place in what appears to be both the pre- and post-mortal existence, because it's where people go after they die, but also where they go when they're getting ready to be born. And it's this desolate house in the middle of the, you know, the Salt Flats, but also in this heaven-like place. And the main character is Winston Duke, who, people who know, he's the other chieftain from Black Panther who challenged him at the beginning of the movie, which I'm so glad this guy's getting more diverse roles to show he's not just big growly guy like in that movie.
Isn't he also the dad from Us, isn't he?
Yes, he is. So, yeah,
that's right.
Okay. He's got some range. But so he is a guy who interviews people to be ready to be born, and then he surveys their life on Earth to see what kind of lessons they learn, what kind of people they become, all that kind of such. And one day, one of his favorite people to observe dies tragically in a car accident. And he doesn't know why. He's investigating it. But in the meantime, whoever creates souls, I guess just the ether itself, starts to send people to his house to be interviewed to fill that vacancy. And so because of, I'm assuming just some kind of religious iconography thing, that it takes 9 days to interview these people and then weed them out. So either they, you know, decide that they're ready to be born on Earth, or they're also very tragically, they just go back to being nothingness afterwards, which, man, this is, for being a kind of pseudo spiritual film, the context and implications of how this universe works is kind of depressing.
For sure.
It does feel like an audition, doesn't it? Like a job interview that you might not get, or, you know.
Yeah, not only will you not get the job, but you won't get anything else afterwards. Yeah, exactly. Just like, oh, I can go home, right? Yes, but there's a catch.
Yeah, I guess you can try to do that, sure.
Well, we don't know what happens to people that become nothing, which is kind of scary in the sense that it's relatable to, depending on what you believe, I suppose, what happens to us.
Yeah, it's very kind of new agey spiritualist kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of ambiguously thought-provoking.
The way anybody is going to respond to this is totally going to depend on their relationship with spirituality and what they believe in, what they believe in terms of afterlife or other, you know, other worlds.
Yeah, which, to be fair, this movie doesn't make any firm stance in terms of religion at all.
No.
You know, it's kind of it could be whatever you wish it to be kind of thing, so.
It definitely stays in the realm of magical realism throughout, which is the right move.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this, that one of the big things I can really praise this movie for is the acting. Like, right off the bat, I got to say that Winston Duke, for carrying, and he's in almost every single scene of this movie.
Yeah.
And he is great. Like, it's a very restrained and quiet performance for him, and he really handles it masterfully.
I guess he's got the least flashy of all, the less colorful of all the roles, and he still ends up being the most compelling character. That's really a testament to him and how he's able to just hold that character, the way his approach to the character all the way through. It's beautiful. It's such a beautiful performance.
Nah, he's really good. I can't really think of anybody who gave a bad performance in this movie. Mm. I think that Zazie Beetz was great when she shows up. Benedict Wong. I mean, he got an Indie Spirit nomination for this role, and he was he's not in it as much as you think, but he makes his presence felt when he's in it.
Benedict Wong was really a surprise, because that was something that you just think was going to be, like, you know, the sidekick who's going to be good for some comic relief, and he is. But the way that character progresses through the film was really surprising to me. I thought what they did with that was really great. It took that character beyond what I was writing him off as.
Yeah, Benedict Wong balances the tightrope of being someone's employee, for lack of a better word, and actual friend that cares about you.
Yeah.
And that's such a hard performance. It's always so freaking corny in so many films.
It's been done so much.
I'm your friend too, even though we work together. But he nails it.
It's so hard to make that kind of character, that kind of archetype, your own as an actor.
And feel like an actual character and not just a prop for the...
Yeah.
Absolutely. But even some of the minor performances I thought were good. Like, one guy who I didn't know a thing about before this movie, and I kind of hope he gets a little bit more attention, is David Rizdahl, who played that guy Mike, one of the early guys in the interview process.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the blonde guy? Like,
yeah.
That's the thing, where for having only so much time in the film, he has a final scene for his final part in the movie that's super sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. That part, I was just like, oh, my heart, it hurts so much.
Yeah, it does.
What's so fascinating about him, he's like anxiety personified.
Yeah, he really is.
I didn't think there would be any kind of satisfying story from him until we get it. And that's what really surprised me.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you two were satisfied by that type of ending, but I was like, being at peace looks so awesome.
Every time that someone is told they're not getting the job, their sort of exit, I found those to be the most beautiful aspects of the film.
Because that's the thing, is that, like I said, this is a very simple movie, because they have a lot of big weighty themes about existence and purpose and what it takes to survive in a harsh world, that it's very quiet, it's very talky, it's very dry. Like, I can't think of any scene where people shouted in this movie.
No, I agree. And I love that this approach is so simple. I know it had to, because it's an indie film, but we could have had some. I mean, it'd been so easy to do like a, what's that movie? I never saw it, so I'm not knocking it, but the Robin Williams movie. What was that movie?
Oh, What Dreams May Come.
It looks just so huge and so like, God, it's, you know, it's just, it's too in your face.
Yeah.
I love something like this.
Like, how many people would go to that heaven and be like, it's a little busy, don't
you? Well, that's
you?
Kind of the point of that film, is that everyone's heaven is specific to their personality and their lifestyle. But this one, it's, again, there's a lot of theology and ideology and philosophy about this heaven that I feel like could be discussed in a lot of different ways. It's not the freshest idea of heaven we've ever seen, but some of the implications of what it means and what it means for people who live on Earth and why they live and the nature of existence that could be interpreted in quite a few ways. Some maybe not as nice as others, but even then you're like, well, what's the movie's point on that? You know, kind of thing.
It's actually very audience friendly in that way. Yeah. There's a scene where a character gives his opinion on someone being bullied. And I said, it's kind of harsh. And my mother-in-law said, well, you need to stand up for yourself. And the movie wasn't criticizing either of us. Yeah. And that's what made it so fascinating to me. It didn't like plant a flag anywhere and say, everyone else is stupid except this idea.
This really does bring out so much from you. And this is a movie that, even though it is very intimate and small, you do sort of need to watch this with other people. I think that would be really great to watch this with a group that saying, seeing what it brings out of everybody. Yeah, I like that. Like what you're saying, Bradley.
Ed Sonoda, for the stuff they do in filmmaking here, it's again, the same thing where it's very simple, but they do so much with what, like a $10 million budget. They get so many great shots. It's a really good looking film.
Mm-hmm.
They have great music throughout this. It's edited really creatively at points throughout this.
Cinematography is so stunning. The colors in this film are just so beautiful.
Yeah, and I think in the editing, I love some of the shorthand stuff they did to relay a lot of information to you with parallel storylines, but all very quickly and very efficiently. You know, just certain, I don't want to say what, but there's certain scenes where the way they cut them together, they juggle a lot of detail in very masterfully, I would say. One of the things I did really like about this film too is that it is a film trying to find a heart to itself, because on its surface, it seems to be a very dry movie. It's a very quiet, very distant and cold feeling movie. But that's kind of its point, is because Winston Duke's character is so detached from the work in some ways. Like, he cares, but he cares in the way that someone who's just done their job well enough for a long time cares.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's really trying to find the heart of the story. And I feel like it does take a long time to get there, but once it gets there, it really makes its stance clear by the end. You know, about how it feels about these characters, how it feels about the journey they've been through.
And kind of a really big testament on what life is, maybe, and what would feeling alive mean to you? It's not asking for you to send them money, so you get a pamphlet on how to, you know, it's not doing the Tony Robbins thing, which I thought it was going to turn into. It's just a very quiet, what makes you feel alive? Roll curtain, you know, like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Whoa, you know, through amazing performances, of course. That's how it made me feel. I mean,
no, I think so. I think so too. And I love how, I mean, when it just gets down to the last two people, contenders. I mean, what to call them?
Applicants.
Yeah, I don't know. But when it gets down to the last two, the way that they're responding to the past several days, for me, it is like about humanity and like the different shapes of humanity and the different triggers. You know, what triggers each individual about what happens, you know, down here on Earth. Yeah, I love that. I think that's such a well-written scene. And it's so quietly explosive.
It's weird to say, like, I don't want to just try to say that there's anything I disliked in this movie, because I didn't, and yet I wasn't fully in love with this movie. Where I'm like, I can objectively say, I think this is an amazing debut feature for this director, and I think he'll make even better films. And I can't pinpoint exactly what it was that kept it down from being great, great for me.
I think, I know for me, Justin, it was not the right time for me to watch this movie. Like, so much is going on. Like, I was so preoccupied with lots of stuff. And I know that this is a movie that has such big ideas, such big thoughts. It's asking you to really engage with it. And I was like trying to do other stuff during it, and I had to stop because I had to stop because I wasn't going to get anything done and watch this movie at the same time. But you know, this is a movie you really need to be ready for when you watch it, and this is not a casual watch by any means.
No, it's an investment.
I know that's the way I felt. Yeah, it's an investment. That's the way I sort of like felt about it. This will really have a profound effect on me another time, not right now. I'm enjoying this right now, and I'm appreciating this right now, and I really like this, but this is not, I'm not watching this at the right time for myself personally.
It's weird. I want to say more, but I feel like there isn't really a whole lot else to discuss that I don't want to spoil for people in this movie.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
it's an experience. It's something that you guys should probably, you know, don't even watch the trailer. I didn't even watch the trailer. I didn't know what I was getting into for a lot of this. So,
oh, you didn't?
Just go in. If you know the premise, that's about as much as you need to know, and I feel like you can take what you can out of it, kind of thing. So, I mean, Brad, any other points before we start moving on to final thoughts?
No.
Okay. You know, I'll just start with all that then. Because, like I said, it's hard to pinpoint what about this movie that didn't cross over into loving it territory. Because I did really love a lot of this. And by the end, I just felt like it's a very long movie, to be fair. I feel like if this movie had trimmed maybe 15 minutes, I can't really pinpoint where, but if it found a way to trim 15 minutes, it would have been the perfect length.
It's so hard. It's so hard to say where, what could you could take out of it.
And that's the thing, it's not a fair criticism per se, but there are a lot of extended sequences of very long shots looking at people doing things. And they're not bad. Yeah. They're really beautiful shots. But it is a thing where if you're going in and you're like, oh, I don't like long movies, you will not like this movie. It is a very slow-paced film.
I feel like they did take us. They did take stuff out. I feel like there is more stuff with more of the participants.
Behind the scenes details for people who want some knowledge about this, I actually have a friend of mine who was in this movie. So she's only in it for, well, she was supposed to be in it for much longer, but the original cut of the movie was actually even longer than this one, like 2.5 hours. So they had to take out a lot of content, and unfortunately, some of the content that was cut was hers. So, but don't worry, to my friend, Melissa, you're in a fraction of a second of this movie. So, and I can pinpoint exactly where.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. That blurry out of focus shot of her in the background is amazing.
It's a great scene, and it's great music in that scene.
It's important.
Well,
so. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That scene is great. But yeah, I can't really say much more. I feel like it's just a movie where, if this appeals to you, let's just say this. Spike Jonze is an executive producer on.
There it is. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels a lot like his Where the Wild Things Are movie. You know, it's got that same kind of tone of that weird, still quiet, but still lush kind of like think piece kind of thing.
Which I love. That was my favorite movie of that year, Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I loved the shit out of that movie. Oh, my God, yes. Ugh.
So if that sounds like something you'd like, then I would say yes, absolutely go watch this movie. So I am going to give this movie 8.5 out of 10 Tarzan yells.
Which, wow.
He can do
it. The Tarzan yell he produced, that is not an easy thing to do. Anyone who likes Disney's Tarzan, the voice actor actually isn't doing that yell. They had to have a professional who can do that yell come in and do the yell. Who then, I believe, got another voice job on the film. But yeah, cool trivia.
It's just them and Carol Burnett. Those are the only people that can do the Tarzan, yeah.
Well, I also loved this movie. I like the quiet, long movies that make you think. David Mitchell is an author I like. He wrote Cloud Atlas and The Bone Clocks. Mm-hmm. If you've seen Cloud Atlas, though, and hear his prose put to overly dramatic speaking roles, you're probably thinking, Brad, that's not deep. That's ridiculous and stupid. And I always thought, why can't a movie make me feel like David Mitchell's prose does? Because Cloud Atlas, if you've seen it, and I'm not knocking any of those fans.
I would say, is that some Susan Sarandon shade right there?
No. That would, like, you go up to anyone and say, you speak the true. Some true, and you'll get a laugh.
People have not seen Cloud Atlas. Just think of Rick and Morty and that one bit from Rick TV, and you know what we're talking about.
That's right, and it was played for laughs.
I'm in Cloud Atlas. What's Cloud Atlas?
I watched Cloud Atlas, and those scenes with Halle Berry and Tom Hanks in that specific era, I thought, well, whatever words I can get from whatever they're saying, those are just the ones I meant to get. At the end of the day, I'm not going to stop trying to figure this out.
Yeah. The silly point I'm making is, wow, I wish that these actors made me feel how I felt when I read the book. But, you know, that happens. Some things don't translate well. This made me feel that way, though. Like, wow, life, right? And I don't smoke or do drugs, but I was like, life, you know? And it made me feel so happy and sad and frustrated and curious and... I'll finish with this anecdote. It's like my wifey, you know, she's like, sometimes saying I love you is enough. And it is. And that's how this movie made me feel. So I'm giving it actually lower than you, Justin. I'm going with 8 pulled chairs out of 10.
Wow, even lower than me. I thought I was going to be the low one on this review. Yeah. One thing I like, too, is that Anton Oda is Brazilian, and I love this undercurrent of Brazilian vibe going throughout this. The music choices, certain stylistic touches they did. It's very subtle, and yet when you see it, you can't unsee it for the movie, and I really appreciated that.
I really like this movie. I think as a screenplay, for lack of a better term, The Afterlife, or the heavens, the fate, universe, the universe, whatever you want to call it. We've seen that on film so many times. I think this is done in such a poetic way. I think it's done in such a romantic way. I mean, it's so easy to go ahead and just make it look like this lush dreamscape that's so cloudy and full of flowers and everything. And it's fucking Utah. I think that was a really good... because it does feel like another world. And I love that. And I think it's a great sort of landscape for these ideas to play out. There aren't a lot of characters here. These aren't characters, but they are just really symbols and springboards for a lot of notions and a lot of thoughts. And a lot.
They all represent a different like mindset and personality.
Exactly.
They're very metaphorical.
Yeah.
So.
And I think the fact that they're all involving in their own different ways is a real testament to this director, especially this is a feature debut, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. And this is great. This really sort of like gives me hope for first-time filmmakers. So sometimes it's just Drek. This isn't. I love the concept of this because I love the ideas of souls determining the course of humanity from person to person.
It's the more dramatic version of that movie Soul from last year. So
yeah.
It kind of is when you think about it.
Yeah, no, I love that they choose the life that we need and the lessons that we need to learn. Whether or not those lessons are learned, or you can't really judge that by, you know, what's going on these days. But
I don't think the people who faded away learned any lessons.
No.
Sadly.
But yeah, no, this is beautiful. This is stunning. The performances are great. I'm remembering this at the end of the year. I really want to watch this again when I'm meant to, because I know I get more out of it. Until then, I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 half-eaten peaches or apples, whatever the fruit that yeah.
That's
anyways.
Wonderful.
I was going to say, too, this is probably the most dramatic I've ever seen Tony Hale act in anything.
I agree.
Yeah. I'm kind of shocked that he managed to get so much out of him, where I'm like, yeah, he's still kind of playing a Tony Hale character, but it's not really for laughs.
You weren't surprised he sat down and Winston Duke's like, why do you think you should be chosen? And Tony Hale answers, I'm trash.
Is it nap time?
Yeah.
I kept waiting for that scene where something bad happens. I'm like, I'm a monster.
Yeah.